Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star two. Please limit your questions to one to two questions maximum. And our first question comes from Scott Davis of Morgan Stanley. You may proceed.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Hey, Scott.
Obviously, some high-quality issues here as far as your cash balance. I mean, it looks like you're going to have about $22 billion of cash on next Friday. I mean, what's the new normal, if you will? I mean, you used to keep about a $10 billion cash balance, if memory serves me right, but clearly there's, you know, you have a fair amount of debt coming due in the next couple of years. But what do you kind of think of as the new normal?
You know, Scott, I think the $10 billion historically would have included a balance of capital. So this balance we're talking about is just at the parent, as you know.
Right.
So I think, you know, when you look with the forecast going forward, we're probably going to keep somewhere between $8 and $10 billion of cash for the near term anyway. I think over the longer term, as you reduce some of the longer tail risks, you may be able to even reduce that below that. But probably somewhere around there would be a place where we would have the flexibility that if we ever needed, for whatever unforeseen risk that we could think of, to have some more cash, to be a little safer, more secure, to maybe be opportunistic. You know, those are the kind of amounts that we would think of today and from an enterprise risk perspective at the parent for the near term.
Okay, makes sense.
Yep.
Guys, and maybe this is for you, Jeff. I mean, it sounds to me like your commentary, you know, a month after the December 14th meeting is substantially more positive, and I think results across the board on an operating basis, at least according to our models, came in pretty solid. I mean, what's changed, if you will? I mean, are you seeing impact from maybe accelerated depreciation? Are your customers finally seeing some blue skies out there and opening up the checkbooks? I mean, what's kind of changed over the last or towards the end of December and the last month?
You know, Scott, I was pretty positive in December. You know me. But I... You know, I would say, look, I take comfort in two things. You know, one is very strong orders momentum, which, you know, that in the types of businesses we're in, that always is what starts the momentum. So I think that's a real positive. And then I would say just the across-the-board improvement in GE Capital. You know, I think Keith went through the operating results, but, you know, there's just more liquidity out there. That's going to help commercial real estate. Losses are lower. Origination is strengthening. So, you know, there's just lots of clues along the way. Now, you know, on the other side, you know, what I want our investors to know is that we are running the place with intensity. You know, I still want to make sure that we are focused on things like value gap, working capital turns, you know, because I think, you know, we want to make sure we run the place with great intensity at the same time. But we do see things that are in, you know, continue to be encouraging as we look at the broad economy.
I'll pass it on in one sec, but is there a change in geographic mix? Is it still mostly emerging markets, or is there some, is it expanded beyond really EM?
You know, a lot of the long-stock orders are still outside the U.S., are still, you know, kind of emerging markets and stuff like that. But I think the number Keith showed that gives me, you know, the amount of volume in GE Capital in the quarter, I think was above what we had expected, and that's a good sign, I think, for the activity that's going on in the U.S.
The next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan. You may proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Just on the gas turbines, did I hear the order number for gas turbines in the fourth quarter, 28, did you say, for the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
So what was that? What would that bring the year to, around 95, 96?
I don't know what the total number was. I can tell you for 11, what we're basically thinking, we delivered 114 in 10, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
For 11, we're planning somewhere around 103.
Okay. I guess if we just add up the numbers we have, we get to about 95, 96. So you guys should be, you know, obviously very well sold out.
We got a pretty good feel for the backlog relative to the estimated conversion.
So how
we
far?
We obviously have commitments that aren't in orders that we think will fill out the rest of the units for 11.
Sure. So how much you sold out for 2012, and obviously if you know, this year is kind of like ground zero for turbine orders, or maybe it's not, and maybe you could just, you know, clarify that for next year. You know, how far are you, how much are you sold out for 2012 at this stage of the game?
I think, Steve, we still have excess capacity
sure.
in 2012. And, you know, what we do, I think you, and you've been through this before, you know, we have a pretty good, like, commitment to, you know, order pipeline. And so our commitment pipeline is building. You know, those convert to orders over time. So, you know, we have a pretty good line of sight for where the industry is going to go.
Do you think book-to-bill in 11 is going to be above one?
Yeah, our estimate is that the energy equipment orders will turn in
positive. That's
in,
my hunch, Steve.
In 11, Steve.
Okay, and then just one more on GE Capital. The portfolio margin, I guess you said it was around 5% this year. That's actually come down a little bit from what you were saying, you know, in the beginning of the year. You know, are you already starting to see a little bit of that margin compression, or should we continue to see, high return business being written? You know, how fast is kind of competition coming back there at GE Capital?
You know, the margins in the capital business were pretty good in the quarter. In the third quarter, we had about 5.04%, and in the fourth quarter, we were at 5.3%. So for the year, we ended. Jeff Bornstein said at the December analyst meeting he thought it would be around 5%. We ended at 5.1% on margins for GE Capital for the total year. So you see the volumes at pretty good returns across the portfolio. Consumer obviously continues to drive its returns up. Real estate, by having less losses, has helped us improve returns, and will continue to do that, obviously, as they turn around going forward. So I think we're still seeing good volume at good returns. We're being very disciplined on the pricing in GE Capital.
And you think the real estate turn is sustainable?
I think we think that losses and impairments peaked in 10, and now we got to see what kind of pace of recovery we have. We obviously have some good indicators early on delinquencies and the fact that credit losses on the debt book improved. You know, we still had some impairments, obviously, in the equity book, so we got to see what the pace of that is in terms of occupancy, rental growth, and overall GDP. But, you know, I think it's pretty. It seems to us like the losses have certainly peaked in 10, and we expect a strong improvement in real estate in 11 and 12.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Tim.
The next question comes from Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse. You may proceed.
Yes, thanks.
Hi, Julian.
The first question, just on the pricing in your energy business. You mentioned overall orders price are down about 3%. So could you talk a little bit about what you're seeing differently in wind as well as in gas? And I guess if you're seeing any kind of stabilization yet in wind pricing.
Sure. If you look, I said the total in energy was down 3. If you look at the pieces of equipment, which were down 6, thermal was down 11. Renewables were down 14, so those are the two biggest. And I think, you know, we're still seeing globally a lot of competition. We got strong competitors, and we got to compete with our products to win in the marketplace. And that's what we've kind of factored into our 2011 planning in terms of the value gap, as Jeff said. So it's a tough competitive market out there, but I like the unit orders that we had in the fourth quarter, and they're in line with what our expectations were for the 11 planning.
Great, thanks. And then a follow-up. In terms of the overall industrial business, could you talk a little bit about the headwinds from R&D and also what you're expecting on the value gap? So if you think about the net of R&D and the value gap shift in 11, you know, how big of an effect do you think that will be on your earnings?
You know, Julian, what I would say is that the R&D is pretty much built into the run rate. It'll be up a little bit year over year, 11 to 10. And then, you know, I would say that we're counting on a value gap that's probably slightly negative in 11, and I'll probably hold the internal teams to try to keep that flat. And it'll be positive in aviation and healthcare and businesses like that, and with a little bit more headwind in energy.
Great. Thanks.
The next question comes from Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs. You may proceed.
Thanks.
Terry.
Just a follow-up on GE Capital first. The loss rates continue to track better than what we've been looking for. And, you know, a year ago, I think you guys were a little more specific about what you were expecting for a range in 2010. And, you know, as we've come out of the woods here, I'm wondering if we might put a finer point on that specific number outlook for 2011.
We haven't really given that out, you know, in terms of a forecast for loss rates. I think you have to say, though, if you look at 2010, we're probably $1.5 billion below what we had expected in terms of loss rates, mostly driven by the credit side, the improvements in consumer, the improvements in CLL. You know, we had higher impairments than we thought in 2010, but hopefully those are going to abate a little. But I think clearly the performance we're expecting in G Capital when we look at 2011 is going to be driven by improved credit conditions as you see these delinquencies and non-earnings roll over. So, I would expect that write-offs will exceed our provisioning by, several hundred million dollars during the year. And over time, the provisions have to come down. You know, we're at 2.5% coverage today. I don't know where they're going to get to over a normal cycle, but clearly we're still at too high versus normal on both the consumer side and the commercial side. So we are expecting G Capital, and G Capital team is even forecasting much improved performance, driven a lot by the credit side, but also the margin side. You know, the new business volumes that we're putting on versus the business that's rolling off continues to be attractive. And as we shrink places in red assets like mortgage, or as real estate goes from a loss to a positive, that's going to be part of the earnings growth driver in 2011 as well. So we don't have a specific forecast that we've given for losses, but clearly they're going to be better here.
Okay, thanks. And then focus of restructuring in 2011, which businesses will see the majority of that restructuring?
You know, right now what we have is we're probably going to have somewhere around a penny a quarter is our normal run rate. You can see that in the core industrial. I think you see that we continue to do plant rationalization in HMBS, both in lighting and appliances. We've done a lot of service rationalization in the energy business. We'll continue that. We'll continue some service rationalization in the aviation business. And we've had a lot of, in the past, total headcount and downsizing in GE Capital. That will continue in some of the red asset businesses. But we're investing a lot in growth on the other side, on the green asset businesses in GE Capital. So I think, right now it's pretty much going to be in the legacy industrial businesses where we continue to rationalize our footprint, the legacy service business where we can be more efficient would be probably the main places.
I would say, Gary, just to add to that, we see the volumes coming back, and our footprint is pretty lean right now. So I think we've done a lot of good work on restructuring, over the last two or three years. So it gives us more flexibility, I think, when we look out for 2011.
Plus, we're looking at other things. Obviously, when we get NBC closed, we do expect a small after-tax gain. We're looking for opportunities there, and that could continue to have more restructuring as well.
Okay, and then just one quick last one. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about the strategy behind the recent acquisition, the Power Quality acquisition. Obviously, it wasn't a large one, and the valuation appeared reasonable. But when you look at the secular growth trends look great there as well. But also, if you look at the competitive landscape, three pretty big players that are all global, talking about customers increasingly going global. It doesn't look like a business you want to just stay small in if you get into it at all, which you've just done. Maybe talk about that strategy a little bit more.
Terry, we've got, inside our energy business, we've got a very big industrial footprint, both in terms of smart grid and kind of the core GE industrial business. We play around data centers, for a long time and around the fringes. This puts us more in a central position there. It's actually quite good technology. And so I think inorganically, now that we've got this base, inorganically, we know all the customers. And I think this just gives us a great platform for good inorganic growth. And, getting in at somewhere between 7.5 and 8 times EBITDA is a pretty good place. This, in its day, this was one of the world-class platforms 5 or 10 years ago. And it's got great, it's primarily North America today. We got a lot of opportunities to globalize it. So I would count on us using this, like we did with wind, as kind of it gets some seed planted, and now we can scale it organically using our technology and distribution.
Okay, just to clarify, so your focus in it will from here be more organic than additional
exactly.
Inorganic. Got it.
Exactly. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Welcome.
The next question comes from Jeff Sprague of Vertical Research Partners. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, just a couple items. Just back on thermal and what's or maybe power overall and getting into price. Where are you at now on price on revenues? Has that now inflected negative?
No, we had positive price in energy in the fourth quarter.
How positive? Can you give us some color on thermal and renewables?
I have the total is $90 million of positive price in energy. I don't have the split between thermal and renewables.
You know, Jeff, I think we, you know, when Keith said, like, the order pricing is down, what, 3% or something
in
like
total,
that?
In total, including service.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's I think the pricing is going to be slightly negative when you look at 2011, and that's kind of how we built the plan for next year. So I think it's kind of into the expectations or the core run rate.
But you still got a pretty we still have a good margin, strong price in the backlog,
yeah.
Especially in the wind backlog that we're still delivering on. So that's gonna continue to mitigate some of this here, Jeff, for a period.
Yeah.
But with what you're doing on value gap, you think even as these down price orders convert, you know, 12, 18 months from now, there's upward room in the margins and power?
In energy, I would say that from an equipment standpoint, the margins will probably be under a little bit of pressure. From a service standpoint, I think there's upward momentum on service margins.
We said overall for 11, you know, we expect margins to be flat to down.
I
think, you know, we expect the value gap to be pressure on margins.
And I just want to understand to the extent that you can help us a little more, Keith, on tax, just kind of a twofold question.
Yep.
I understand the dynamic of, you know, NBC, but what is really the base we should be working off for industrial as we think about, you know, what the tax rate is for 11?
Sure. I would say let's take a look at the last 2 years. So if you do 2009, our GE exec rate was 22%. If you do 2010 and you exclude the impact of the settlements, which we do not anticipate repeating, and you exclude the impact of the incremental restructuring we did, high-tax restructuring, which, you know, most of that was obviously the Hudson Reserve, which we, again, don't anticipate repeating, you're probably around a 23% rate for 2010, Jeff. And I don't see anything going forward in 2011 that would change that, ex the NBC thing, which is going to raise the tax rate somewhere between 15 and 20 points for the year. So I would model on a core somewhere in the low to mid-20s for the industrial tax rates.
And just to take that to the capital side also, the $1.7 billion structural benefit you talk about, should we think of that as solely a benefit through deductions, or is there an element of credit there? I'll leave it at that. Is it just deduction-based benefits, or is there direct credits that come in?
No, it's basically the fact that our global organization allows us to have very low taxed overseas earnings. So when I say a credit, you know, I think you're going to be basically dealing with income that results in less than a 35% rate that gives you the equivalent of around somewhere between $1.5 to $2 billion of credit, and then the tax rate will depend upon how much pre-tax income we have. So take the pre-tax. Grow it next year for the fact that you're going to have lower losses, lower credit losses, lower impairments, and better margins. You offset it a little bit for the volume. We're going to continue to shrink the book, and you put the 35% rate on that, and then the $1.5 to $2 billion, somewhere around 1.7, is a good estimate for just planning. It gives you an estimate of what the G capital tax rate would be. I mean, the
right.
Tax rate's a lot of volatility. I think the fact that we're saying for guidance, you know, keep the benefit somewhere around $1.7 billion. Is the best guidepost for you, and it's split pretty evenly around the quarter. You know, if you look in the fourth quarter, we had about $450 million of credits, tax benefits from the global financing structures.
Thank you. Just one last comment, if I could.
Sure.
What are you planning on NBC in terms of reporting? I mean, will we see that as a separate line, or is it going to just be kind of glommed into corporate? And
well, it's going to be in corporate. It will be a one-line reporting, but it's going to be we've moved it into corporate for next year, and it'll be a minority interest net income, and we'll tell you what it is every quarter. But right now, we've basically said we expect about 5 cents of dilution versus this year, and you know, if you look at the total year results that we have, which we published today on pre-tax. and you work that into about 5 cents dilution, you can get the estimate for what 2011 will be.
Just a question. Our plan is to show it
one line,
but show it as an item, right?
It'll be incorporated, yeah. And we'll tell what the item is.
Yes. So you'll know what it is, Jeff.
Yes.
Right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Guys.
Okay.
The next question comes from Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital. You may proceed.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. You cover a lot of ground. You know, Keith, you just go back over the reserve reduction and talk about the reserves of the write-off reserve accounts. So the whole reduction reserve and the implications for your view of credit quality going forward.
Well, sure. Basically, as we continue to see delinquencies and non-earnings improve, Bob, basically we're not going to be required to continue to put up as much new provision as the book improves. So in 2009, we had about $10.6 billion of credit costs related to the debt portfolio. In 2010, we had $7.2 billion of credit costs, losses. So I don't know what the exact pace of acceleration of continued improvement is. We've seen an awful lot of improvement in the consumer book. I think there's more improvement to come in the commercial book, and certainly more improvement to come in the real estate book. But we expect to continue to see that provision go down, and we expect to have write-offs greater than the new provision, which will result in lower reserves going forward. And we expect to have very good, solid earnings growth in G Capital, obviously in 11.
Yeah, clearly. You've been asked this question a couple of times, and you just alluded to it earlier. I mean, in terms of reserve coverage, I mean, obviously you guys used to use the 2.63 metric for years and years, and now you're at 2.47. I mean, and you alluded to that going down. I mean, where is, a normal, run rate for GE? Where should we expect that to go in the next couple of years?
As I said, I don't have a specific number on it. I think that 2.63 was a long time ago and was a number that doesn't reflect the current mix of our business at all today.
I know, but in terms of the, I understand that, but in terms of a range of where the 2.47 could go.
It's going to be lower, Bob.
Thanks.
I think you got to, we can model out the commercial losses. They're less than 1% today. I think that's going to continue to improve. I think on the consumer side, it's going to depend upon what unemployment does as to how low it goes and how quickly it goes. And I think you've got a sticky unemployment situation, so we got to watch that. We've got not a great housing situation, but we have definite improvements in our book based on the underwriting changes we made and the performance of the retail portfolio we have. So I think it's going to be lower. I think you've got to have to take your own stab at how far to go with it.
You mentioned earlier, you said real estate going from a loss to a profit. I think that was
it's going from a big loss to a lower loss.
Right. One other question. In the aviation business, you talked about the quarter impacted by R&D and sort of product development costs. I mean, are some of the headwinds that we were previously anticipating for 11, did that come into the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, Bob, we talked about the GNX, and I think some of the things Keith talked about were one-time impacts in the fourth quarter. And kind of what we said at the December meeting, which was aviation segment profit should be about flat in 11 versus 10, I think that's still a good outlook for the business.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
All right, Bob.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Dean Dre with Citi Investment Research. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning,
hey,
Dean.
Hey, we covered a lot of ground about the quarter and the outlook, but I'd be very interested, Jeff, hearing about your new role in Washington. You've been pretty outspoken, and my guess is you're coming in with a little bit of a couple agenda items, maybe tax and energy policy, but just give us a sense of what the role is, what expectations are, and how we see that playing out.
The first thing I'd say, Dean, is all you guys know my commitment to GE and my leadership at GE, and that doesn't change. This is my passion. I'm committed. I'm a hard worker. So I am focused on the company. But, at the same time, I'm honored to be able to work on something that I think has importance in a broader economic context. And I think, Dean, the focus is going to be exactly what it said, competitiveness and jobs, and a focus on, exports, global tax policy, regulatory, manufacturing jobs, energy, things like that. And so I just think it's a broader context, and I'm honored to serve.
Just given the reach of GE's businesses across the economy, it's hard to fathom that there's going to be any topic that comes up that doesn't have a direct impact on GE. And just how do you expect to manage those conflicts?
Look, again, with great transparency. You know, in other words, I'd say, you know, on one hand, I know a lot because I see a lot, and that's a strength of GE. But at the same time, I think both as a company and individually, I've always understood context and where we fit, and I think I'll manage that with great transparency.
Sure, and congratulations on that. And a quick question for Keith. Didn't sound like Shinsei came up at all, and so how did that play out for the quarter in terms of expectations?
Sure. We when you take a look at Shinsei, we made no adjustments in the quarter. As you know, we ended the third quarter with about $1.7 billion of reserves. At the end of the fourth quarter, the reserve balance is down to $1.5 billion. So we settled a number of claims through the quarter, about $200 million in the last 3 months. And we continue to see, as new claims come in, they were higher in September, October, November. They've started to turn back over and go down again. But the bankruptcy clearly, the Takifuji bankruptcy has clearly created a bubble of claims here. We believe that the court is not going to complete its work with Takifuji claimants until sometime in the first quarter, and we're going to just have to watch those claims as they go down. So we've got a senior leader dedicated to this task with a big team in Japan. We're continuing to work with Shinsei on all the process around claim management, litigation management. At the end of the day, you know, we think we're still adequately reserved for the liability that we have in Japan.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
The next question comes from Jason Feldman with UBS. You may proceed.
Good morning.
Hi, Jason.
So could you give us a little bit more color maybe on what you're seeing in the aerospace aftermarket? You know, in prior quarters, you've mentioned deferrals of overhauls, and it was a little bit tough to interpret the decline in service orders this quarter, given the comps that you mentioned, you know, the big order a year ago.
Yeah, I think a couple of dynamics going on there. It's a good question. We did see good spare parts orders, ex the Aviol. So we had the one-time big order with Aviol last year, but ex that, we're seeing a lot of good incoming orders. Again, you know, we have a price increase that we put in at the end of the year that's effective for this year. So some of that is orders before that takes effect. That was about 5% for 2011. But, you know, with the average daily order rate coming in at 25% up, that $25 million a day and up significantly. That felt pretty good. If you look at overhauls, we saw overhauls, trying to just find the number for you here, they were up about 8% in the quarter. They had a little lower job scope, so there wasn't a big revenue increase there. And then in terms of total service margins, we had some pressure in utilization from some of our customers that offset some of those order rates and the spare parts. We had some people flying the planes a lot less than what we had originally anticipated, and so some of that offset some of the spares orders. But in terms of the outlook, we feel pretty good about the ADOR, you know, the order rate.
And the spares orders in the first couple weeks in January are also very strong. So I think the year is starting off, you know, in a good way.
Okay, so it sounds like the activity is kind of catching up a little bit to the underlying flight hour growth.
I think you saw a little of that in the third quarter. You saw a little more in the fourth quarter. We're feeling pretty good about that outlook, yes.
Okay. GECAS, on a sequential basis, was actually one of the strongest areas of growth within capital finance. Is that just because of the timing of the annual impairment review? Or is there something else going on there?
Sure. As you know, we do the impairments in the third quarter. That was one of the biggest events. The other thing, they also had some tax benefits in the fourth quarter that don't repeat, that were they were offset in capital corporate with some tax charges. But at the end of the day, it was part of the increase in GECAS results.
Okay.
Would have been closer to flat with last year without some of the lower taxes, I would say.
Got it. And then last thing real quick, a couple of quarters ago, you mentioned a couple supply constraints in various areas, I think particularly in healthcare. Have there been any issues anywhere across the business with respect to
improved.
That's actually improved. And,
okay.
And I think that's good for healthcare because we've got a nice big backlog going into this year, and the supply chain seems to have worked its way out.
Thank you very much.
Great. All right.
The next question comes from Nigel Coe with Deutsche Bank. You may proceed.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Nigel.
Yeah, good morning. I hate to return to the energy pricing, but I'd be interested to know, if you're looking on a Q-over-Q basis, is pricing starting to stabilize, or we still see some pressure from 3Q to 4Q?
Yeah, I think pricing on both thermal and wind was a little worse in fourth quarter than third quarter. I don't remember exactly what the numbers are. We can go back to the script. We set it in the third quarter. We can get it to you through Trevor and Joanna, but it's a little worse on the equipment side.
Okay. And then, you know, looking at 2012, you still have, you know, gas and also wind as you know, drags to the 2012 earnings growth. And I'm just trying to reconcile that with some of the positive commentary we're hearing from some of your peers like Alstom, et cetera. Do you think there's upside to that outlook? I know it's 2012, but you are seeing commitments coming through. And do you think that maybe there's room for that to turn positive in 2012?
You know, look, I think you've got volume getting better. So volume, I think we've seen interest, commitments, and volume getting better. Volume is going to continue to get better, you know, during 2011. So there's a long cycle business. And you know, I think it's all about productivity and things like that in terms of how will we execute on those sides. But you're going to see volume improvements as you go from 2011 to 2012. Now, you know, what I would say, Nigel, is again, just as a backdrop, when you think about our energy business, it's a very big business. So I would divide it into kind of four parts. You've got heavy-duty gas turbines and wind. Then you've got all of the distributed energy products, aeroderivatives, Jenbacher, things like that. You've got service, and then you've got oil and gas. So you've got a lot of the components of energy that are going to be positive in 2011 and positive in 2012. And that's why we like the business, is that it's a diversified portfolio. So, you know, could there be upside? Gosh, I hope so. But, you know, I think it's kind of the ebb and flow of the market. And, look, we have half the heavy-duty gas turbine market, and our share is very strong and will remain strong. And our wind market share, and, you know, we had just put out, you know, their results yesterday. Our wind market share in the U.S. is up 10 points. So we're gonna have as good an outlook as any of our competitors, you know, as we go through the next couple of years.
Okay, got it. And then a quick one for Keith on the reserves. Now, we've seen a divergence between non-earners and delinquencies for CLL. And I'm assuming that we're going to start to see the non-earners starting to bend down towards the delinquencies curve. Would that be a trigger for further reserve releases, or do the reserves reflect more the delinquencies rather than non-earners right now?
It's more on the delinquencies has been generally, but I think the other factor that may come in is if we continue to have recoveries that exceed what our position was. I mean, we had $100 million of recoveries on things that we fully reserved in the real estate business, and that results just like that comes into the P&L just like a reserve release. So the fact that we reserved it 100%, someone paid us off, we may continue to see some more of that in the real estate business and maybe some of that in CLL.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
The next question comes from Christopher Glenn with Oppenheimer. You may proceed.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Just wondering about the total CRE impairments in 2010. It seems like it might have come in a little bit above the forecasted 2.2-ish that we've talked about, and if maybe you got aggressive to end the year there and help out in 2011.
Well, you know, we booked what we thought we had to, obviously. I think the 2010, you're right, came in at $2.3 billion on the impairments line in real estate. And, you know, we have seen some improvements. If you look, the declines in rental have abated, increases in occupancy have improved in many markets. I think these were a little bit unusual because a lot of them were concentrated in Japan and some in Europe. But in many parts of the equity book, we've seen the pressure from impairments abate, and we have some early positive signs. I just, you know, how good will it get and how fast will it get? I hope you're right, but you know, 2010 was a little higher. It was higher than we thought. It was probably about $1 billion of impairments, higher than we originally anticipated.
Okay, and then just following up on Nigel's track on the gas turbines and heavy duty, with the maybe some signs of significant cycle and extraction of natural gas and I think your power bubble supply glut is now absorbed. Could we see a pretty strong U.S. cycle start to emerge, do you think, which we really haven't had for a decade or so?
No, look, it's a great question. You know, I think if you – I just looked at this a little while ago, but I think if you look at the U.S. in the last decade, let's say between 2000 and 2010, we sold somewhere between 40 and 50 heavy-duty gas turbines in the whole decade, you know. So we still think the U.S. is going to be a gas and wind market, you know, with the price of natural gas where it is. When we talk to our utility customers, it's the prevalent commentary in terms of what they're interested in. So, you know, I think that's out there somewhere. You know, we're not counting on it for 2011. We don't. But, you know, that has a very high likelihood of happening at, you know, at some point based on reserve margins. And
the reality
is
the environmental constraints around coal,
yeah,
the challenges around nuclear, the timing, the approvals, the costs. I think that ultimately when we have the demand generation here, we're going to be sitting in a pretty good spot.
I'll give you a factoid. You know, Keith talked about it earlier, but, you know, kind of before people buy heavy-duty gas turbines, they buy aeros, you know, because they're quick to sight and they fit in around the edges. I think our aero orders were 2X in Q4 or something like that. So that's not a bad sign.
Yep.
Great. Thanks for the caller.
The next question comes from Steven Winoker with Sanford Bernstein. You may proceed.
Good morning. Thanks.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking the call. First question, just to follow up on Chris's question around gas in the U.S. If you were to believe that utilities have to meet this 2015 deadline for gas, coal to gas conversion, would you likely to be start seeing those orders, assuming you win them and share in sort of the 2012 time frame, or do you think it would be later?
I think it's 2012, Steve.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what, and just so I have clarification without harping on the pricing thing there, but if you look at the breakout geographically a little bit, and I sort of look at the Virginia loss to Mitsubishi, are you seeing it worse in the U.S. than you are elsewhere?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
No. I think it's not necessarily.
Okay. All right, and then just on the dividend discussion, you know, you're planning for 2012 for GE Capital again to GE, and I keep thinking my numbers that it should be earlier, and I'm just trying to understand: is it still the Fed that you're waiting on there, or you're just something different?
You know, we're obviously making great progress in GE Capital. If you look at you see the Tier 1 ratios for GE Capital Corp, GE Capital Services. The fact that we're shrinking the book faster, the fact that, you know, we've continued to pay down our debt and prepay or pre-issue debt so that we're ready to pay down future maturities. Everything in the place feels better to us. I think the change that we've got to get to is we are committed to being well-capitalized under whatever regulatory regime and whatever the measurements are that people are going to have and be accountable to. We have an idea of that, but we don't have a formal agreement on that with the Fed. The Fed is going to become our regulator sometime in the first half of this year as part of the Dodd-Frank. We're going to transition from the OTS. We've got to engage in those discussions, Steve. I think we're well prepared for it. I think we've been planning on it for 18 months now. I think Mike and the team have staffed up. We've changed processes. We've got better policies, rigor, account, you know, reporting, everything in place. But we've got to go through that process. I feel great about the progress in GE Capital. And with the discussions that you read about that are going on with the banks about dividends relative to different capital ratios, you know, we're going to have to see. Our plan doesn't assume anything in 11. Our plan assumes that in 12 we'll get a dividend as a part of their earnings. And going forward past 12, our plan assumes that we're going to get some excess capital out of capital as we shrink the book and have additional capital in excess of even being well capitalized under any metric that we can see today.
And Keith, there was nothing on WMC this quarter, correct?
WMC in the quarter, we didn't change anything in our reserves. We had about $250 million of backlog of claims at the end of third quarter with $100 million of reserves. At the end of the year, we end the year with about $350 million of claims. We left the reserves at $100 million because we had very favorable experience against claim settlement rates versus what we had anticipated. So we feel like we've got a very solid reserve against the claims that are out there, and we feel very good about the business position on the ability for people to make claims based on the strength of the work the team did in WMC. So we ended the year at 350 of claims, 100 of reserves, and we feel very good about it.
Great. And finally, Jeff, in light of your comments continuing to be very, very substantially more positive, as I think Scott led off with also over time, in light of that, when you think about your M&A strategy and the comments you made in December and the sort of $5.5 billion or so that we've heard about in sort of the larger acquisitions, that kind of $3 billion and under number still stands as far as you're concerned, or are you starting to think, in light of things moving much more positively, that you'd consider more?
No, look, I think, Steve, what I said in December and what I really believe is that we should be investing in our core franchise in a way that our investors get the benefits of our ability to assemble acquisitions. And so if you think about what we've done in energy, if you think about what we've done in oil and gas, you know, we create value for you by staying disciplined in that range and giving our investors the benefits of the accumulation value. And so I like what we've done. I think they've been well indicative of the kinds of deals. You know, if you look at the four deals we've done, I think they're very indicative of the kinds of deals we're going to do. And we want to be balanced and disciplined. I think we like the dividend. We think buybacks are going to be important. And I think this notion of balance and discipline is important for GE.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura. You may proceed.
Good morning.
Hi, Shannon.
First on real estate, I mean, how do we think about, I mean, can you first talk about what the, other than the Japan issue, what the underlying valuation declines are, what the liquidity is like in the market, and how do we think about how the unrealized loss could move forward from here? I mean, can it go away in an accelerated way either through asset sales or improving valuation assumptions, or how could that evolve?
Well, we're going to continue to have depreciation of around $1 billion a year. We'll have to see what happens with valuation in the portfolio in real estate. In the total portfolio in the fourth quarter, we went from 5 to 6% type of valuation declines third quarter year to date down to 0 to 1 in the fourth quarter. So that was an improvement. And for our properties where we have a specific reserve, you know, we were in the teens in the third quarter year to date. We went to down 3 to 4%. On specific properties, so we do continue to see improvements. We had improvements in occupancy in our own properties. We went up to a little over 80%, I think the number was, and we've seen obviously an abatement of declines associated with rental growth in many of the regions. So you know, if you got a valuation turn here, you're going to have an ability to eat into that unrealized loss much quicker. But right now, we would plan on eating into it in a orderly way. We think we'd get down somewhere around zero at the end of 13, something like that.
But as you, I mean, let's say the market continues to improve in that fashion. I mean, the next time you do your sort of update, is there a, an adjustment for current market conditions that could significantly change that faster than 2013?
Well, sure. It's not on the books, obviously. It's an unrealized loss in the equity portfolio. So that could get better, and we'll obviously communicate the changes in that as we go forward. We're doing that kind of twice a year now.
Okay. And then just on the consumer piece, I mean, the the write-offs still were up sequentially. Seems like that should be turning pretty soon. I mean, can you just talk about a little bit about the different maybe pieces of dynamics of why write-offs are still going up there?
I got to take a look at that for you. If I look at consumer in the quarter on write-offs, we'll continue to clean out delinquent accounts. We have a formula. I mean, basically at 180 days on a closed open end, we write that thing off. On a closed end, it's written off by, I think it's 360. It's completely written off. So it's all formulaic based on delinquency.
Right. I guess just what I meant is sort of, looking at the U.S. business versus, other pieces, I mean,
majority of the consumers,
even on that
US
formula, you should see some of that stuff having gone down already. I don't know if there's one piece that's still keeping it up.
No, it's mostly U.S., right? There's the credit card, and then there's the retail sales support that we have, and I think they both are performing about the same pace.
Okay.
Yep.
Just a quick clarification. I mean, the provision, right, was like $1.35 billion or something. Did you mention $1.6 billion? Could you just reconcile what the difference is?
revision in the fourth quarter is $1.355 billion. What I said was we had the total would have been 200 higher except for those
except
the
for
original
those
provision was higher, but it was declined by 200 for those two events I had, the recoveries in real estate as well as the release of the reserve in the consumer business.
Right, so that gets netted
that's,
in the provision.
That's the difference, exactly, Shannon.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yep.
Great. Michael, we're running against our time limit here. Why don't we take one more question?
Thank you. Our final question comes from John Inch with Merrill Lynch. You may proceed.
Yeah,
hey, John.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Let me start with the corporate items. So the 10 cents of restructuring and other charges, why was the corporate item sequentially up $1.75 billion? Could you maybe, Keith or Jeff, give a little color as to what was in that number?
Well, the corporate items year over year were $1 billion worse, right?
$1.1 billion.
Yeah, and about 400 of that is the incremental restructuring versus last year. So we had more restructuring in the fourth quarter of 10 than we had in 9. That was about 400 pre-tax. Last year we had a gain in corporate, and we also had the operations of security, the earnings in security while it was held for sale. The total, that was about $300 million of credits in corporate that didn't repeat. And then we had about $100 million of higher R&D this year, and the pension plan was a couple hundred million higher, as you know. So those four pieces, I think, would account for the delta year-over-year in corporate.
And the full 10 cents is in corporate, right? The restructuring.
Well, there's one penny's in corporate capital. The other 9 cents after tax is in corporate, yes.
So your thoughts, Keith, I know it's hard to predict, but your thoughts about how to think about the corporate line for 2011?
Yeah, we have in the framework, as Jeff said, we think it's going to be a bit negative versus 2010. I think, obviously, there'll be less restructuring, but we're going to have the dilution of NBC included in that line. We're going to have some restructuring, and we'll have whatever restructuring we do offsetting the NBC gain in that line. And overall, when you put those pieces together, we think it'll probably still be just slightly negative.
The $200 million...
The biggest piece is the dilution of NBC, obviously, John.
Right, no, I understand. The $200 million of reserve releases, I kind of had the impression coming out of the Capitol meeting that you guys did not expect really reserve releases. Is there something that really changed, and does that imply, if you look at the trend, that there could be more reserve releases in 2011? I'm just trying to understand sort of...
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm trying to walk a world where we think of our reserves, provisions, and write-offs a little differently than the banks, but people report the banks as a complete release of reserves, and we're trying to make sure of the distinction. Most of our decline in reserves comes from writing off actual receivables, but then we want, just for clarity, to say, okay, we had $100 million of recoveries against previously reserved items. Is that a reserve release, or is that we were favorable in our collections activity versus what we ultimately thought the loss was going to be? You know, we're just giving you transparency on it. We didn't plan on having reserve releases, but we did have benefits versus our positions. On the consumer side, you know, we had a subjective reserve as delinquencies got worse. We put up some additional reserves in 2009 and early 10, and obviously, as the delinquencies have improved, we just couldn't justify keeping them there. So that was about $100 million. So we don't have big numbers like that. I think we could have some, you know, 200 out of the whole quarter is probably not a lot, but we could have some more in 2011 as we go forward. If we can get recoveries in excess of previously reserved accounts, that'd be great. But I think the main thing that's going to happen is our provisions are going to have to be less going forward as the delinquencies and the non-earnings improve. That's going to be the main driver as we go into 11, John.
Yeah. Just lastly, I think you even said the year-to-date industrial tax rate around sort of the 23% ex settlements. I think we calculated that for the fourth quarter. What do you think the industrial tax rate is for the first quarter? In the comments, Jeff, you suggested it was going to be higher.
It's going to be really high. I think if you look at that NBC page that Jeff showed you, we're going to have a pre-tax gain of somewhere around $3 billion, and we're going to have a tax charge of somewhere less than that, around $3 billion. Resulting in a net gain in the quarter, but that $3 billion of taxes is kind of locked in, and it's going to create 15 to 20 points for the year. I do not know what it's going to do for the first quarter. It's going to be a lot. We're going to have a very high rate in the quarter driven by that event.
But again, John, it doesn't impact the
EPS.
Framework, the EPS.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, that
changes the rate, but not...
It changes the rate, but not the EPS.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining our webcast today. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon. We'll also be distributing our quarterly supplemental data schedule for GE Capital later today, so take a look for that. Our first quarter 2011 earnings webcast is scheduled for April 21st. And finally, as always, Joanne and I will be here and available for questions today. Thank you, everyone, for joining.